And now, on with the show.
Welcome, everyone, to Weekend Watch. Here we go. I'm going to jump right in. What are you laughing about?
I saw you kind of trying to come up with something to start.
I didn't know where to go. I don't know what to do.
You've got nothing, so it's just like, here we go.
I'm all tilted because of David already.
I didn't even say anything.
Not while I started recording. I'm just saying, this is Weekend Watch. This is our show where we talk about great things to stream. On our various favorite streaming services. So I'm sitting here as normal with Keith and also David.
Hi.
Hey, what's up, dude?
What's going on?
Keith, not a lot.
Keith really got into the spirit of this week. We have a theme week. It's 1950s week here on our decades series. David, on the other hand, hates everything, every movie ever made before about 1993.
I mean, there's a pretty clear definition of the modern ages and the stupid ages, and you're making us watch movies from the stupid ages.
You are like the only one who thinks this.
There's
it's in black and white.
1986 is when we began the enlightenment of the modern ages.
What was that, like the first Batman movie?
No, man, that's 1968. When they did the movie spinoff of the TV show, man, that was a great movie. David probably hates it.
I would probably hate it too. I hate that.
Man, that movie was so campy. It was so good.
Adam West.
Yeah.
I have not seen it.
You haven't? Oh, man. It's fantastic. They get all the best villains from the show.
I only like angsty Batman.
Adam West Batman is not your jam. You don't like tights and onesies.
He doesn't scowl enough. And those cute little eyebrows drawn on his cowl is not, they don't really count. They're not, those are not intimidating. Oh, those are not intimidating mean eyebrows. They're cartoon mean eyebrows.
1966, that's what it was. I mean, it makes sense that you only like the angsty Batman because you're even more of a curmudgeon than the angsty Batmans are.
Batmen? Yeah. Bat people?
Bat guys.
Bat crowd.
Nice. I swear to God, you're like if Shrek had no redeeming qualities.
What is a group of bats called? You got like a murder of crows and a council of
pigeons.
Owls?
Pigeons? No.
Shit, I don't even fucking.
You just brought up.
I knew they're like a council of something, and then I've blanked on what it is.
A group of bats is sometimes called a cauldron.
A cauldron of bats.
Sure, that's what Google says. So that's got to be true. A cauldron. All right.
Today
somebody had fun with that one.
Wait, what do we do on this podcast?
We're talking about Batman. David's turned this into a Batman podcast. So, anyway, as I said before, Shrek over there decided to go off on a tangent about what bats are called. We're here to talk about some things you can watch on your favorite streaming service. As I said, it's 1950s week in our decade series. So we've got some of our favorite movies all released in the 1950s. I'm going to let David go first so that he can be done because he clearly hates everything. So, David, what's your first pick?
This is something that I actually didn't absolutely hate watching. It's the original House on Haunted Hill, 1959. This is going to be on HBO Max. And it's got Vincent Price in it. That's honestly why I chose it. I think that he's a fantastic actor. He brings an amazing on-screen presence. He's Vincent fucking Price. I wanted to watch this and the 1999 version, but that's not streaming anywhere, but it's not the biggest loss. That's anyway. This was a nice fun movie. It's a 50s horror movie, so it's kind of campy, and there's a kind of really goofy marionette skeleton at the end that's totally supposed to be scary and not absolutely fucking hilarious, but whatever. It was a nice little jaunt through early horror cinema. Oh, I guess I didn't give the synopsis. Shit, I have it like pulled up and I didn't I like completely forgot about it. Okay. Eccentric millionaire Frederick Lauren and his fourth wife, Annabelle, have invited five people to the house on Haunted Hill for a haunted house party. Whoever will stay in the house for one night will earn $10,000 each. As the night progresses, all the guests are trapped inside the house with ghosts, murderers, and other terrors.
Spooky.
I suppose that's a word you could use for it.
So spooky. Yeah, I don't know. It's campy. It's fun. It's probably one of Vincent Price's more famous roles. You know, he's kind of known as like a legend in horror, but I think this is probably one of his biggest movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I liked it. It was good.
It's a nice, solid, early horror.
Definitely. Intro. Keith, did you have a chance to check that out?
Yeah, I watched it. It's not my favorite. I don't like the 1999 one. This one's okay. Like I don't know. I don't hate it, but I don't love it. It's just kind of a neutral one for me. But I do agree that it is like a nice little intro to this early horror. Like this kind of stuff and Hitchcock are probably like the go-tos if you're getting into these early horror movies.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so check that out. Currently streaming on Prime Video. I'll go next. My first pick is the 1950 Japanese film Rashomon. Rashomon, hold on, I'm going to pull a David and can't find my... Here we go. Okay, so the film opens with a woodcutter and a priest sitting beneath the Rashomon city gate to stay dry during a torrential downpour. A commoner joins them, and they tell him that they have witnessed a disturbing story, which they then begin recounting to him. The woodcutter claims he found a body of a murdered samurai 3 days earlier while looking for wood in the forest. As he testifies, he first found a woman's hat, then a samurai cap, then cut rope, then an amulet, and finally he came upon the body. Upon discovering the body, he says he fled in a panic to notify the authorities. The priest says that he saw the samurai with his wife traveling the same day the murder happened. Both men are then summoned to testify in court, where a fellow witness presents the captured bandit, Tajamaru, who claims to have followed the couple after coveting the woman he glimpsed her in the forest. The movie then goes on to tell the same story in four different ways. Essentially, you're looking at the point of view from four different people who witnessed or were part of this rape and murder. And the stories are all different. It's probably the first use of that kind of trope of, you know, using individual perspectives to tell a story, and everything's different. You kind of have to piece together what actually happened. It was by Akira Kurosawa, who's kind of the legendary filmmaker out of Japan, along with maybe Miyazaki. He's a pioneer in cinema, not even, you know, just Japanese cinema, but, you know, the techniques and stuff he used in this movie and a lot of his other movies really influenced filmmaking around the world, which was kind of why I picked it. In addition, the main reason I picked this was because I wanted to force David to sit through a black and white movie with subtitles.
This is actually one that I didn't... I'm not going to say that I hated any of these movies because they're not like bad. I didn't hate them. I'm just, my attention span is not constructed in a way that I can sit through movies from the stupid ages.
Uh-huh. That's quite a different take now that our software is recording from what you were saying earlier.
How is it different? These are movies from the stupid ages.
You said they were all terrible and horrible and you fell asleep during all of them. Did you watch Rashomon? Did you sit through the subtitles?
I stayed awake through a larger portion of Rashomon than any of the other movies.
Stupid. It's probably the worst one.
What are you talking about?
Rashomon's a cool movie just because of the structure of it, though. Yeah. Like, and not just because. It's got fantastic acting. These actors are brilliant.
That's what I was going to say. Some of the performances are like truly unhinged. They really
get into it. Unique to each of the four stories, like you can pick out whose story it is by how these people are acting, and it was really it's pretty amazing. But you're right, Kurosawa is just pretty incredible with the things he came up with. You know, you get these very linear movies coming out of these earlier times of film, and he really looked at it in a different light, that every time you're looking through the film, depending on whose perspective it is, it could be a different story. And that's exactly what he did with this movie.
Right. And he used various filmmaking techniques to make each individual story, which are all happening in the same setting, but they all look a little different. Like,
yeah,
you know, the lighting is different depending on who's telling their version of the story. You know, the atmosphere feels different depending on, you know, like I said, who's telling their version. Is really cool. That being said, you know, it's not perfect. People fall down a lot in this movie. The choreography is, you know,
proto anime. That's they didn't really change that trope as their cinema evolved.
Yeah, they're very very emotive for sure.
Not a very stable on their feet people.
Right.
Apparently.
It was not Kurosawa's first movie, but I'm trying to see it here. It was only his maybe first, second, maybe third samurai movie. Like, it takes place in medieval and feudal Japan. I think it might have been one of his first to take place that, like, in that time period, which is pretty cool. But you can definitely tell he's still trying to figure out, you know, fight scene choreography, especially, you know, with swords and stuff. But other than that, that's my only.
They were still trying to figure that out with the prequel Star Wars trilogy.
That's a very good point. Yeah. So this is one I think everybody should check out, if only for its importance to modern day cinema.
Yeah, I agree.
And if you get into it, he's got a lot of other good movies that are absolutely worth watching. I almost picked Seven Samurai because of its influence on Star Wars. But I figured David probably wouldn't sit through a 3.5 hour movie that's black and white with subtitles.
The fucking 2 hour ones were bad enough, man.
You fell asleep during them anyway.
It's not that bad when you time travel through it.
I kept waking up and being like, holy fuck, this shit isn't over yet.
So if anybody's interested, a couple other movies to check out are Seven Samurai. He's got a couple samurai movies. One's called Yojimbo and the other one's called Sanjuro. That are a lot more like Japanese Westerns, you know, with samurais. They're really cool. You just check them all out. But definitely check out Rashomon. It's currently streaming through the TCM curated collection on HBO Max. And with that, I'm going to send it over to Keith. Keith, what do you got for us? What's your first 50s decade pick?
My first pick is going to be Gary Cooper in the 1952 Western High Noon. I have a special place in my heart for this film. I've watched it a bunch of times. What was it, a couple weeks ago? I don't remember. I just picked The Quick and the Dead, and I'm just a kind of a sucker for Westerns anyway. And this is one of the Westerns that got me into not just Westerns, but how to watch a film and how to pay attention to certain things. And this is just such a fucking amazing movie. It follows a really interesting timeline that you don't see even in modern movies, where all time that passes in this movie is exactly the amount of time that the movie takes. You get to see glimpses of the clock throughout this movie, and every time you see the clock, the exact amount of time that's passed on the clock is the exact amount of time that's passed in the film. And that's A, really hard to do in filmmaking, and B, just really cool way to film a movie where this is very much a slice out of time in this small town of New Mexico. It follows Gary Cooper's character who's planning on leaving. He's the marshal and he's getting out of this town, but a local criminal that he had meant to hang is on his way back into town because he was not hanged. He was locked up and then freed. So he's coming back into town, and he's got to figure out a way to save this town before he bails on it. And like I said, it's just a really cool slice out of time and out of the end of this guy's career, probably the height of his career in this town as well. Did you guys get to watch this movie?
Yeah, I checked this one out this morning, actually. I loved it. It's so different from all the other Westerns that were coming out at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, they were all basically just, you know, it's all action. It's all, you know, shoot 'em ups and horse chases and train robberies. And, you know, it's all action. This High Noon comes out and it's so different in that, like you said, there is no action in the first what, hour of the movie while he's trying to prepare for his nemesis to arrive on the noon train. You know, he's does the air of desperation as it sets in as he's trying to find people to back him up, people to deputize, because he knows this guy is coming back to try to kill him. It was really interesting. It's a lot of dialogue, a lot of atmospheric tension building leading up to the climax of the movie. I loved it.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you liked it, because I know some people probably, David's probably going to agree with this, that it can be a little slow. But once again, I feel like it really makes you pay attention to what's happening. And like I said, the timing of this movie, you're going through this hour and a half with this town. It's all perfectly timed, and I love it.
Yeah.
Did you watch it, David?
I was going to say, you know, that real-time cinema is it helps with that slow build. You know, that desperation, the fact that nobody in this town will come and back him up, the fact that he has to go out there all alone, you know, it all sort of accumulates into this very palpable tension.
Did you watch this one, David?
I told you I watched them all. And you're the one that I didn't watch them because I fell asleep, went back and studied them. I was going to wing it, fake it till you make it. Would you shut up about it?
I'm really not going to. Which decades week are you going to watch all of them? Or are you going to stay awake during all of them? That's my question.
Whichever decades week, we don't pick boring movies.
God, you're the worst. Right on. High Noon is fantastic. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, Gary Cooper's incredible in this movie. I guess he had a bleeding ulcer throughout the entire filming of it. I was reading some trivia on this movie, because there's a ton of trivia on this movie, and he just gives a remarkable performance. This is, like I said, one of my favorite movies and one of my favorite Westerns. Check it out. It's on Amazon Prime.
I was also reading up some history on it, and I didn't realize how connected this movie was to the Red Scare of the 50s. This was one of the productions that was really impacted by McCarthy's HUAC hearings about Hollywood.
Yeah.
In fact, I think the head writer, it was either writer or producer, I can't remember, wound up selling off his share of the movie because he got pulled before the committee and blacklisted. So he sold off his half before the movie even opened, and then moved to Europe because he wasn't going to be able to work here anymore.
Man, fucking 50s were a wild time.
That's for sure. Yeah, so check out High Noon, currently streaming on Prime Video. I think, David, that's you next.
That's me, I guess. So the second movie that I picked this week, I just kind of went iconic, something that I've been very aware of, but never really put any effort into watching. And that is going to be Rebel Without a Cause. James Dean's iconic last movie before he decided to move on to the next life and inhabit a car.
This is the most badass way possible.
He is living in that car now. So this is going to be the story of Jim Stark, is the new kid in town.
Did you say the name of the movie?
Didn't I say Rebel Without a Cause?
Yeah, he did. I think he did.
I don't think he did, man.
Pull your head out of your ass, Spencer.
Rebel Without a Cause. That's what David's talking about, everyone.
Jim Stark is the new kid in town. This he has been called in trouble Rebel elsewhere. Without a Cause. That's why his family has had to move before. Here, he hopes to find the love he doesn't get from his middle-class family, though he finds some of this in his relation with Judy, and a form of it in both Plato's adulation and Ray's real-time concern for him. Jim must still prove himself to his peers in switchblade knife fights and chicky games in which cars race towards a seaside cliff. And then Buzz dies because, I mean, if your name is Buzz, you should probably die. Except Buzz Aldrin. You're a hero. Anyway, Buzz is a shitty name. Don't name your kid Buzz.
What about Buzz Lightyear?
Ooh. That's a toy. That's a fictional... He can be named Buzz because he's a cartoon character.
Nah, dude, he's going to be a real character soon.
What about Buzz from Home Alone?
Clifford is okay for a name for a big red cartoon dog. Not really okay for a child.
You're making a live-action Clifford. Have you seen the creepy photos of that, by the way?
No,
I have not.
The, like, monstrosity they had to create to, like, for the green screen that the kids had to film with? Oh, God, it's creepy. Anyway, you can move on. Let's rip
keep talking about this movie, David.
So one of the descriptions on Rotten Tomatoes is Rebel Without a Cause is a searing melodrama featuring keen insight into the 50s juvenile attitude and James Dean's cool, iconic performance. And to call it a melodrama is a little bit of an understatement. It is melodramatic as fuck. But it's the 50s. It's Rebel Without a Cause. Like I said, it's very iconic and wasn't a bad movie to sit through.
Yeah, it's good. I think it's probably so iconic just because James Dean died. I don't know.
Probably.
It's not a movie I enjoy watching multiple times.
I'm going to say it. I didn't even really like his performance in this movie. I don't like Jim Stark. I didn't like the character. It's like somebody trying to be James Dean is what it really felt like to me. It was a weird performance, but I get why it was big for his time. And like you said, I get that he died and it made it even that much more huge.
I agree. I think that if he'd have gone on and to get top billing in more movies, this movie might have been sort of forgotten, sort of pushed down the list of his best movies, but it wasn't.
So. Yeah, I mean, he was only in three movies, right?
Yeah, something like that.
I think
yeah.
It was just three. It was East of Eden, Giant, and Rebel Without a Cause.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't know. My favorite part about this movie is the one that's seared into my memory of watching this on, I don't know, Turner Classic as a kid, or I don't even remember it. I remember seeing it as a kid, and the scene of them playing chicken came up, and that scene's just burned into my memory. I had no idea what I was watching as a kid, and then I watched it again as an adult, and it's like, you guys are fucking morons. I mean, Buzz kind of fucking deserved to die. I'm sorry. Fuck you, Buzz.
Yeah, he's a piece of
shit. Don't wear the stupid members-only jacket while you're doing some stupid shit.
Where is it streaming again? Is that HBO Max?
Yes.
Right on. David, anything else you'd like to tell us about Rebel Without a Cause?
Watch it once because society says you should.
Good call. Right on. I guess that's my turn then. My next pick for Decades Week, 1950s edition, is one of my favorite Alfred Hitchcock movies, and that is North by Northwest. North by Northwest is a 1959 American spy thriller produced and directed by Alfred Hitchcock. It's a tale of mistaken identity with an innocent man pursued across the United States by agents of a mysterious organization trying to prevent him from blocking their plan to smuggle out microfilm, which contains government secrets. So it follows the main character, Roger Thornhill, played by Cary Grant, who, like I said, it's a case of mistaken identity where he's kind of abducted from a restaurant at the beginning of the film by these two henchmen, and they take him back to their boss, and they all think that he's this government agent trying to foil their sinister plans to sell state secrets to other countries. And he escapes, and the whole film's about him trying to clear his name and figure out what exactly is going on. And I think it's probably one of the best movies of the century. It always tops, you know, lists of greatest movies of all time. And I kind of agree. It's a fantastic movie. It's a great thriller. The set of the plot takes you all over the country. Some fantastic filmmaking. Do you guys remember that shot where he's leaving, that like top down shot as he's running from the UN building?
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's fantastic. The composition of some of these shots is just, it's breathtaking. The colors that he uses, the blocking, it's just so good. I love it so much. It's Hitchcock's movie with that iconic scene of Cary Grant being chased through a cornfield by a crop duster as he's being shot at from the plane.
And then it runs into that tanker. That non-explosion was entertaining.
Nah, it was good. That exploded all over the place.
Special effects.
Maybe if you were awake for more scenes, you'd more appreciate that movie.
Maybe if you chose a more engaging movie.
I'm going to disagree with you on that one. This is, as far as engaging goes, I find this movie to be incredibly engaging throughout the whole time. You're following it, like I said, or before we started recording, 5 minutes in, you're just like thrown into this story of what the fuck is going on? Who the fuck are these guys? What the fuck is that guy doing? Why are they talking to this guy? Why do they think he's that guy? Why is that guy so important? There's just so much what's going on that it keeps you enthralled throughout the whole thing. Cary Grant is just, I mean, chef's kiss. That guy is incredible. His humor, his wit is on point this entire movie. Like, I just love his little quips back at people. He's like high anxiety, but still kind of cool under pressure. Like, I love this character so much.
Yeah. He's so self-confident, quippy, cool guy. Yeah.
I really, really enjoyed this movie, and I think it was probably the most engaging out of what we had on our lineup tonight, because like I said, it the whole way through, it keeps popping questions at you and more and more. You still don't know what's going on, and I loved it, and I think the performances were great. And I think they were really kind of pushing the boundaries of their visual effects. Hitchcock was doing some pretty amazing things for the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I will say the one critique I have of this movie is the ages of the characters make no sense. All right. So you've got Cary Grant's mother, played by a woman who's only 8 years older than he is. Then you've got
things were different back then.
Right. His love interest, who in the movie at one point says she's 26 years old, and he is very clearly pushing over 50.
Easily, yeah.
And when he filmed the movie, he was over 50, and the woman who played the love interest, Ava Marie Saint, was 20 some odd years younger than him. So it's a little bit, you know, it's definitely the 50s. But just the fact that his mother was only 8 years older than him and doesn't look old in the movie threw me for a loop a little bit.
Yeah, it was a little weird for sure.
That being said, like I said, I think it's one of the best movies ever made. Probably top three of Hitchcock's movies for me, too. Fantastic. Everyone should check it out. It's currently streaming on HBO Max. And with that, Keith, I think you're up for our final pick of Decades Week. What do you got?
All right, I'll bring him home with probably one of my favorite movies. This is in my top 10 easily, and maybe even top 5 is 1959 Some Like It Hot, Marilyn Monroe. Who goddamn.
Yeah. yeah.
This is such a fucking good movie. It's on Hoopla. So need a library card, but it's worth it. Sign up for Hoopla. Go watch this movie. It is fucking incredible. Talk about critically acclaimed. This is probably one of the highest rated comedies of all time. This is just such a good movie. It's so hilarious. I'll go through a brief synopsis. There's your two main guy characters that are they witness this like murder, and they've got to get out. They've got to figure out how to cover their shit. So they very quickly improvise a plan by disguising themselves as women, and they join this all female jazz band. it's just fucking spot on humor from there on. Like, it is just so good. Marilyn Monroe's character is fantastic. The characters, the performances, the setting, there's so much about this movie that I think was A+, and then it was just perfectly executed.
This is probably my favorite comedy of all time. It's timeless. The comedy is, the movie is, what year was it?
1959.
So that's what, 62 years ago. And it still is, it's timeless. The comedy hits. It's I don't know. It's just so good. The comedy makes sense still. It's still so fucking funny.
Yeah. I was just I just recently watched it again. I've seen this movie a bunch of times, but I picked it, so I had to watch it. And I was rolling again. I fucking love this movie. Were you able to watch this one, David?
Yeah. Starts off very dark with just that's the Valentine's Day Massacre, right?
I was going to say, yeah, that's the same Valentine's Day Massacre that they're depicting.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the way most comedies of the era started out. But I definitely appreciate the irreverent humor, everything about it, just poking fun at all the crudities of the day, I guess.
That was the thing about this too, is it takes place in 1929.
Yeah.
Like, this movie was it was 30 years prior is the setting from when it was actually made.
And it was, I mean, it was pretty sexualized for even the for even 59. Like, they were pushing some boundaries with this movie, and it was great. It's not like it was, I don't know, they didn't make a smut film or anything. They just did things that you kind of see in modern day film, and it was really weird to see on screen at this time. So,
What's funny about that, as that was one thing I was going to bring up about North by Northwest, was it was also incredibly suggestive, just like Some Like It Hot.
Yeah.
Both in 59. Movies, I mean, we're getting towards the end of the Hays Code, which was, you know, the censorship office essentially for filmmaking before the MPAA became a real thing. And, you know, they were very clear about what you could and couldn't do in movies. And, you know, Billy Wilder and Alfred Hitchcock were masters at going right up to that line and not crossing it.
Some Like It Hot helped end the Hays Code, right? Like, didn't that?
I think it had an effect, or it might have been. Yeah, I mean, it was definitely was one that kind of led to its demise.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad we replaced that with a much better system.
Right? So much better.
But yeah, check this movie out. Again, it's on Hoopla. It's called Some Like It Hot. It is massively hilarious, and the performances all around are amazing. This is a great film. I think everybody should watch this one.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the most classic comedy. It's so good. Everyone will enjoy this movie. Like you said, on Hoopla, right?
Yeah.
Right on. So that's it, guys. We did it. We made it through the 1950s week. Hooray.
Yay.
Anybody have a warning, something not to watch? Did anybody try to watch a movie from the 50s that they wound up hating?
50s poop? Nope. I had a pretty good idea of what I wanted to watch anyway, so I didn't shuffle through any 50s poop.
How about you, David? You hate everything.
I watched what I was required to watch and nothing more. That
doesn't surprise me. Well, fine. I'll find something, maybe. I don't know. I got nothing. We all liked our movies this week. How about anything not from the 50s?
No, I mean, I could suggest again to watch more WandaVision if you want to catch a little glimpse of what 50s TV was like.
Ah, yes, absolutely. WandaVision is really great.
It's continuing through those decades and branching even more into the current time, and it is fucking awesome. So
yeah, were we up to this last episode, like the 2010s, like parodying like The Office
Modern Family.
Yeah, it was good. It was a good episode. I'm really looking forward to the last couple.
Man, it's good shit. So as we go through the decades weeks, you should check out some WandaVision as they make their way through the decades as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's fucking awesome. Cool. Well, that's it then. No warning this week. Just, you know, check out all these things we said to watch from the 1950s because they're good. And that's it. I'm going to wrap it up. Don't forget to check us out on Facebook, on Twitter. Don't forget to check out our website, 3guys1up.com. Check out our Patreon is linked on our website. As always, please consider becoming a patron of ours, because $5 a month would go a long way towards us continuing to produce such professional and polished content.
Professional.
So professional. We almost watch all the picks every week. We mostly watch them.
I mean, I maybe.
Most sometimes. Sometimes. I thought David might have something to say, but nope.
Nope, I got jobs.
All right. Good night, everybody. We'll see you next week with a regular week. No theme next week. Good night.